didn't move. I don't care who it is. Let's go. Give me everything you got. Play fast, play hard. Let's beat these boys tonight in their house.
It's party time. It's party time.
Dad, here we go.
Touchdown. You are listening to the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. Now here's your host, Brand Duffy.
That's right, another week, and we are inching closer and closer to training camp as the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast continues. I'm Fran Duffy, and as always, I think we've got a great show for you here on episode number 103. At the top of this week's show, we've got Chalk Talk, where I chat with my buddy, former NFL offensive lineman, Ross Tucker, and we are going to spend a ton of time today talking about the Eagles' offensive line. He played with Jason Peters when he began his career in Buffalo. He spent a ton of time evaluating the entire line over the last few years, and he has got a wealth of knowledge when it comes to that position. So I'm really, really excited to talk to Ross about the Eagles' line, which the team views as a position of strength moving into the season. Then we will wrap up this show with our scouting report, where this week we will break down a rookie that I am excited to watch compete against that offensive line this summer during training camp. But before we get into that, let's not waste any more time. I spent my morning chatting with former NFL offensive lineman Ross Tucker about this Eagles offensive line. Let's get to that chat now in Chalk Talk.
Let's get down to business. It's time for Chalk Talk.
Very happy to be joined by former NFL offensive lineman and the host of the Ross Tucker Football Podcast. You can catch him on a long list of podcasts, in fact, not to mention the College Draft Podcast. Excited to talk to him here today. Ross Tucker, I appreciate you joining us here on the Eagle Eye in the Sky Podcast for the first time on Chalk Talk.
I know. Fran, I'm pumped. I feel like I've been talking about the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast on the College Draft podcast for years. I'm glad I finally get to come on and chat with you. What do you got for me?
Well, it has been far too long since we've had you on, but I think really the big thing that I want to hit on first is, you know, the Eagles made some big news a few weeks back at the end of OTAs, beginning of mini camps, by re-signing Jason Peters to a long-term extension. I just wanted to get a sense of what he was like in his early days. You played with Peters when he came up in Buffalo as a former tight end at Arkansas. He got to the NFL, so you got to see him really go through that maturation process. What made him special? You know, how quickly did he stand out to you? Do you have any stories from the young Jason Peters coming up early in the NFL?
Oh, yes. Well, and I can tell you, the first thing that just stood out to him, obviously, was we all know how big Jason is. Picture that guy playing tight end. I mean, he played tight end at that size at Arkansas. That's the type of athlete that he was. He went undrafted, and I don't know if he had off-the-field issues or it was just the concern about the position or what, but he was an undrafted free agent, and I could tell you a bunch of stories. I mean, number one, you know, he just stood out like a sore thumb with the tight end position group because he's 70 pounds heavier than the rest of them. But then I remember distinctly being in the hotel about a week before final cuts. And this is back when the first cut went down to 65. And he was cut, just hanging out in the hotel. I said, what's the deal? He said, they're going to put me on practice squad. So they had cut him at the cut down to 65 because they needed guys at other positions for the final preseason game. So he wasn't practicing with us. He didn't play in the final preseason game, but he was sticking around because they already told him they were going to put him on the practice squad, which, you know, back then, 2004, he was kind of the ideal practice squad guy because you saw that there was just a unique combination of size, speed, athleticism there. You just weren't sure really what to do about it. So he was practice squad, I'd say, Fran, for about the first half of the year. And then, you know, they decided to put him up on the active roster primarily for special teams and just get his feet wet a little bit with getting some time. So he became like a goal line short yardage tight end, which the blocking part of that came very easily for him. You know, for him, it was really just the mental part of how complicated the NFL was that slowed him down. But I know you're a film junkie. You got to go back and look at some games from 04, man. I mean, first of all, he was running down on the kickoff team at 320 pounds. Second of all, like, watch the Bengals game. I don't know, he was wearing number 80-something, maybe number 90-something, but the Bengals game from 2004, he blocks a punt in Cincinnati and then scoops it up and recovers it in the end zone for a touchdown. Like, what future offensive lineman is running down on kickoffs, blocking punts, and taking them in for a touchdown? So that would be awesome footage if you guys could dig that one up for Eagles fans. I think would love that. I know Jason would probably get a kick out of that as well. In terms of him moving the offensive line, though, I'll never forget that day the rest of my life. I mean, I have a bunch of people that sign up to get my emails over at rostucker.com, and I usually tell them stories about me. The most recent one was this story that I'm going to tell you, which is that there was a day, maybe November, maybe even December, and they said, you know what, let's have Jason go down for one-on-ones with the offensive line and just see how he does. You know, put him at tackle and just see how he does. You know, maybe we'll transition the offensive line. Dude, you've never seen anything like it in your life. Right away, nobody could beat him. Nobody. I mean, our best pass rushers, Aaron Schobel, Jeff Posey, guys that were pretty darn good, Ryan Denny, they couldn't even get close to beating him. He was so long, had such good feet, was able to sink his hips so well, was so strong. I mean, I remember sitting there, I don't know if I threw my helmet, but I was thinking, I've been working on this every day since sixth grade. This guy, in 6 seconds, is already light years better than I ever was. It was the darndest thing, Fran, I ever saw. I've never seen a guy that good that quickly, and of course, that's why he's probably going to the Hall of Fame someday. At least he should.
So at what point that happened, you said like a day in November, what was the transition like then? Like how quickly did it take for him to kind of take over as the starter at left tackle after that point?
So we were on a roll that year, and we had our tackles were set with Jonas Jennings at left tackle and Mike Williams at right. So the rest of that year, he was just a special teamer and a goal line short yardage tight end, like a heavy package. Kind of like a sixth offensive lineman deal, but he started getting a lot more time at one-on-ones and along the offensive line in practice. And then in the offseason, they officially moved him to offensive tackle, and they moved him to right tackle. I think that they were a little bit concerned at first. They were a little bit concerned about, you know, the mental part of it and protecting the quarterback's blind side. They wanted to, at least if he had a mental error, for it to come from the quarterback's, you know, line of sight, vision, whether that was Bledsoe or that year, J.P. Lossman, because picking up the right blitzers, knowing who to block, that did not come naturally for Jason. And I remember that next year, 05 training camp, I remember wondering if he would ever figure it out. You know, if the light would ever go on for him in that regard, because you can't put guys out there that don't block the right guy. I mean, no matter how well they block the guy when they block him, if they're not blocking the right guy, you just can't have him out there in the NFL. It's a strip sack, quarterback gets hurt, it's a touchdown, you just can't do it. So I remember during training camp, he just still wasn't ready yet. And even, I'd say, it took till midway through the year in 05 that they finally plugged him in there. And then every once in a while, he would still have a mistake, but he started to play really, really well. I think it was the next year, 06, I was gone, but the next year, they moved him over to the left side, and then he became, you know, the franchise left tackle that he's been. But I don't think his first start was until midway through his second year, that 05 season, when they really decided to try him out there and see what he could do. And ever since, obviously, he's been a terrific player. I remember thinking, I don't know if he'd ever figure it out, but Tom Donahoe, who was the GM of the Bills at the time, I remember he said, he'll get it. It might take another year, but he'll get it. And it didn't even take a year. It took half a year.
And obviously, Tom Donahoe now here in Philadelphia in a role with the Eagles scouting department. It's really interesting, too, to hear that it took, I mean, it took a year and a half from that day where, you know, jaws were on the floor at practice watching him go through one-on-ones. It took him a year and change, up to 2 years, before he really kind of established himself as a starter there. And, you know, it's interesting, too, you see now here in Philadelphia, you've got guys like Taylor Hart, who's making the switch from D-line over to offensive tackle. They had last year Dylan Gordon, who, like Jason Peters, was a college tight end, was a heavy college tight end, making the move to the offensive line. And every year, Jason Peters, you can look out before practice, you can look out after practice. He's always he almost has a couple of pet projects during each, whether it's training camp or mini camp, OTA, where he's working with young guys or developmental guys and just teaching them different parts of technique and just going through rep after rep after rep, taking guys to the side and working with them. Was there a guy that you noticed was that person for Jason Peters during your time in Buffalo when he was starting to make that transition when you were there?
You know, not really. I look back on it, and in 04, it was Jonas Jennings and Mike Williams were our tackles. And, you know, after the season, Jonas Jennings was in a contract year. He got big money to go to San Francisco. They signed Mike Gandy to come in instead. And Mike Gandy came in from Chicago, and he was really just focusing on making sure he earned the starting left tackle spot there in Buffalo. And then on the right side, we had Mike Williams, the former number four overall pick, and he really was not the mentor type. And in fact, he basically lost his job, you know, to Jason Peters that year. And they tried Mike Williams in at guard, and it didn't go real well, and it was an issue. So I wonder, just talking with you, Fran, I wonder if maybe Peters would have been able to move along faster if he had more of that mentor. But in my mind, the mentor, that they can help more with the technique stuff. On the mental part of it, you know, that's mainly the coach. You know, the X's and O's is mainly the coach. The technique stuff, I feel like, is where vets and other players can really help out more.
So, Roz, let's talk about the rest of this Eagles offensive line, because I know the coaches here are really, really excited. This team is really excited about what they have up front. Incredible depth. You have the talent and the first-string unit with Jason Peters. You've got Lane Johnson. You have Jason Kelsey, who had, you know, a bit of an up-and-down year last year, but I thought really settled in the second half of 2016. Brandon Brooks was solid all season long. Let's start first with just that first unit. What are your overall thoughts on guys like Lane, who we got to see for a handful of games last year, Jason Kelsey and Brandon Brooks?
Well, I think that they do have a chance to be, you know, one of the top 10 offensive lines in the NFL. And I think the Eagles need them to be. You look at the teams that made the conference championship games last year, and even some of the teams that didn't, like Oakland, Dallas, the Tennessee Titans, you know, who had a resurgent year. Those teams were led in large part by their offensive line. I mean, you could argue out of the, you know, arguably the 10 best teams in the NFL last year, maybe seven of them had top 10 offensive lines, which is where the Eagles need this group to be, and they absolutely should be. I mean, because not only do they have the bookends that you'd like in Lane Johnson and Peters, who, you know, are both, Peters still playing at a really high level, Lane Johnson is a rare athlete at the right tackle position in the NFL, but the interior guys as well. What I like is that I've always been a Kelsey fan. I think sometimes his athleticism almost gets him in trouble because he's able to do things to guys that, you know, puts them in a position where he can throw them down, he can snatch them, and he gets called for holding penalties sometimes. But even if you look at, like, the left guard spot, to have the competition that they have there. And I think what you said, I think almost as important, Fran, is the depth. I used to go into it and say, you can almost count on the fact that your sixth guy and probably your seventh guy are going to start a bunch of games. And so for the Eagles to have a guy like Wiz Wisniewski to be right there, or and whoever you want to have as the swing guy at tackle, whether you want to say it's Barber or Vitae or whatever, they've just got guys that are experienced, but not long in the tooth, You know, they're still arguably in their prime. They're not just experienced. They're experienced in this system with this offense to the point where if there is an injury to one of these top-line guys, there shouldn't be that much of a drop-off like, you know, you could argue in a few games last year there was. I think that the Eagles, and not only do they have a top-10 starting unit, I'm not sure there are many teams in the NFL that have better depth than the Eagles do along the offensive line.
Russ, what was the most talented line you played on in terms of overall depth? I mean, you look at, and especially once you get to training camp, because you've mentioned so many of the names that are on this offensive line. I was looking, just trying to get a sense of, all right, how many are you going to carry? You're going to carry 9 offensive linemen, you're going to carry 10. What is the number going to be? But there are probably, you could reach into the teens when you talk about the players that could vie for a roster spot, not even counting the young guy. You have the young guys in Seumalo and Vaitai, the rookies from last year, some of the other younger veterans that are on the team. There's some really interesting players that are on this roster that, you know, just watching what this training camp battle is going to be like, what is that like when you're in that position in terms of you know that there's so much depth and it's going to be kind of a dogfight once you reach the summer and once you reach training camp?
Well, it's exactly that. It's a dogfight. These guys aren't dumb. You know, I mean, they always say, "Oh, don't count the numbers." You know, don't worry about it. They know what the deal is, right? They know that the 5 guys projected to start right now are all on the team. They know Wiz is on the team, so those 6 guys are on the team for sure. And I think that there's a pretty strong chance that Vaitai's on the team. That's 7. Then these other guys, Gordon and Tobin, I think even Barber's probably on the team. That's 8. These other guys are fighting for 1, maybe 2 spots. And so what the Eagles are in a good position there is if they had like a situation like the Saints where Unger and Armstead both got hurt, if the Eagles lose a guy during camp, they've got another guy right there. You never know, too, Fran. These guys might play well enough in preseason that who knows? You know, maybe they can flip Chance Warmack for a draft pick, or maybe they can flip Matt Tobin. You know, you never know how that goes, but you want to start with that place. I don't know that I've ever been on a team with, you know, a situation where 11, 12 guys legitimately, maybe even 13, could or should be on an NFL roster this year. It is very enviable. I think the best O-line I ever played with probably was my rookie year with the Washington Redskins. I mean, John Jansen and Chris Samuels at tackle in their prime were fantastic. You know, Dave Zide at left guard was awesome. I was just very fortunate that, you know, the Redskins had such salary cap issues. I think that that's one of the reasons why they kept me as the 9th and last guy, you know, a cheap undrafted free agent, because they knew they were pretty set with the other guys. We ended up cutting guys, you know, like Mookie Moore and Derek Fletcher that had started games in the NFL. So, because they just wanted to go a little bit younger and go a little bit cheaper, and that was me, thankfully.
Ross, the last question I have for you, you mentioned Chance Warmack, and I think that everybody in Philadelphia is really excited about what his potential could be, a former top 10 pick at the guard position, going back here to Philadelphia to work with Jeff Stoutland, his coach with the Crimson Tide, and he has talked about that relationship and just how close they are. What is that relationship like when you can find, as a player, when you could find a coach that just gets it? He knows how to teach you. He knows what resonates. He knows what buttons to push. Did you have a coach like that? And what can that do for a player who maybe struggled at his first spot, then transitioning to a new location?
It's gigantic. I don't think that I can possibly overstate it, because I would tell you, you know, one of the things that was an issue during my career, it's like, you know, Fran, it's a craft like anything else. I mean, it is a craft that you need to learn. And so the issue is, if you are constantly changing the way in which you're going about it, makes it really tough. I had 9 offensive line coaches during my NFL career. 9. And you know what? I wasn't established enough that they let me just do what I want. They wanted me to do it their way. That becomes really difficult. It's like you're a rookie every year. You're starting from scratch over and over again rather than mastering one set of techniques. I think that Chance Warmack had mastered what Stoutland wanted him to do in college, not only know what they asked him to do in Tennessee. He's had multiple offensive line coaches down there. But then once a guy isn't playing as well as you want, you try to fix this, you try to have him do that. I think, yeah, I don't know if he'll make the team. I don't know how much success he'll have. But I do think that's why he signed with the Eagles. It's because he knows this gives him his best chance to have success this year, whatever that ends up being. And really, moving forward in his career, because the physical ability is there. We saw him road grade people, you know, in college at Alabama. And, you know, to get him in the mix with Brooks and these other guys inside, if they could get him to what made him a top 10 pick, then the offensive line would be downright scary.
Ross Tucker, that was about 20 minutes, and that was probably the fastest 20 minutes I think I've experienced in the last at least week or so. I appreciate the time here on Chalk Talk on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. Appreciate you coming on.
Hey, my pleasure, Fran. Anytime, you know I grew up a huge Eagles fan, so anytime I get you to talk Eagles, it's fun for me.
Great stuff from Ross. And again, you could follow him just like I do on Twitter at RossTuckerNFL. And while you're at it, I'm at FDuffy3. That's where I post all of the podcasts I'm a part of and all of our X's and O's content that we produce here at PhiladelphiaEagles.com. And you know, I greatly appreciate everybody that promotes this podcast on all forms of social media. That's one way to support the show. But really the other and the best way is to go onto Apple Podcasts or Stitcher, wherever you listen, and give us a rating and leave us a comment. I wanted to give a shout out to Your Romeo 310, who rated the show and left a comment all the way out in L.A., some California love from Romeo. He asked about how important it is for Zach Ertz to take a leap in year two with Carson Wentz, and also if we should be worried about Jordan Matthews' knee after missing a good portion of the spring in OTAs. To answer that first, I wouldn't worry too much about Jordan Matthews' knee. The team hasn't announced any reason for us to be worried long-term about Jordan's knee, so I wouldn't worry about that. But as to the first part of your question, I'm excited to see the development in terms of the relationship between Carson Wentz and Zach Ertz. And you saw that connection late in the year. You saw the numbers that Zach Ertz was able to put up as one of the top targets in the passing game. The question will be is, you know, numerically, when you look at the numbers, are we going to see outstanding production from Zach Ertz when you factor in the fact that, you know, maybe they're going to run the ball a little bit more this year with LeGarrette Blount in tow? Maybe we're going to see a little bit more diversity in the pass game with Alshon Jeffrey and Torrey Smith and Matt Collins still having Jordan Matthews inside. Maybe a resurgence from Nelson Agholor. So will those targets continue to get spread out? You still have the other tight ends in Brent Celek and Trey Burton on the roster. You know you're going to get an impact in the passing game from Darren Sproles and from rookie Donnell Pumphrey. So there are a lot of targets in the pass game to go around. So I don't know that Zach Ertz is going to be the most productive of tight end in the NFL, but can he be a consistent weapon in the passing game? Can he continue to improve as a blocker, which he has done every year in the league? I absolutely believe so. So I'm really excited to see what Zach Ertz and really the rest of this Eagles offense, how all of this personnel adapts to the second year with Carson Wentz as a starter. So great question from Romeo, and thanks to him and all of you out there for your continued support for this show and all the rest of our podcast offerings on PhiladelphiaEagles.com. All right, and last week's show, which we served as a mini camp wrap-up. If you hadn't listened to that, I would suggest going back and listening to some of the thoughts of the four writers that I spoke with. We talked a lot about Eagles' first-round pick, Derek Barnett. Well, this spring, before he was selected with the 14th overall pick, we spent a ton of time talking about Derek Barnett throughout the early part of the offseason on the Journey to the Draft podcast presented by AAA. Let's take a look back at the handful of times we talked about Derek before he was made an Eagle.
Who are we most anxious to see? For me, Tennessee's Derek Barnett, because I think edge rusher is an underrated need for this football team. And at that middle of the first round spot, Barnett has a good workout. I wonder if he becomes more in play for the Eagles. Six players where you have to trust the tape. And basically it means, look, don't worry about the athletic numbers. When you see them on film, when you watch the highlight film, that's going to tell you the type of players they are, okay? They're not going to be track stars or athletic freaks. They're going to be guys who are just good, solid, productive football players. So I'll start things off, and I mentioned him in the edge rusher segment, Derek Barnett from Tennessee, very productive in the SEC, good technician, is able, good motor in terms of being able to get after the quarterback. I don't know if he's going to light up the combine from a number standpoint, so at the end of the day, I think you just look back and say, this is a guy who is going to be able to win off the edge in the NFL. Is that going to be good enough for you? I don't know, but he's a guy who's in that first round conversation. Obviously, his workout will help justify which way he goes, but I think at the end of the day, he's someone you have to trust the tape on.
Tommy, the defensive line has become a really interesting spot for the Eagles as well, with Connor Barwin being released earlier in the week. And then just earlier today, we heard that Benny Logan is signing with the Kansas City Chiefs. So whether it's at defensive tackle or on the outside at defensive end, are there any players in particular that you think would be really good fits for what Jim Schwartz wants to do on defense up front?
Yeah, well, if you're talking about pick 14, there's not really a defensive tackle that I think is going to be on the board at that point. You know, in terms of defensive ends, Derek Barnett from Tennessee, guy just broke Reggie White's career sack record at Tennessee. You know, he's a fantastic player. He also is a smart player and a relentless player, and fits kind of the description that you listen to Joe Douglas talk about, the kind of players that he wants to build the Eagles roster with. And I certainly think Jim Schwartz and Doug Peterson would be right on board with a guy like that.
Do you have a dream scenario for what you would love to see happen at number 14 for the Eagles?
When you look at the draft board right now, the two guys that jump out at me are Derek Barnett, the defensive end from Tennessee, and Corey Davis, the receiver from Western Michigan, because they both are fit a position of need in terms of a pass rusher and a pass catcher. But they're also, they seem to fit what you hear about Joe Douglas, Howie Roseman, Doug Peterson, the kind of guys they want. You know, guys that are talented, but they're successful, they're grinders, they're hard workers, it's a complete package. These are not just athletes or not just prima donna types or what have you. These guys are really good football players with size, athletic ability, the whole package. And we'll see if there's a cornerback that jumps up there. But right now, Barnett and Davis probably the two that they really stand out as guys I'd love to see in Eagles green.
Our task this week in pick six was to take six prospects in this year's draft and compare them to current Eagles. I'll start things off this week here.
All right, start it off.
So this is one that I felt good about back at the Combine, and it was something that was already percolating in my mind because I was already thinking of this exercise for this week's edition of the podcast, and it kind of was cemented when one of the graphics displayed a comparison during the broadcast, and it was Tennessee's Derek Barnett, the defensive end, and our own Brandon Graham. And if you start with similar frame, you look at Barnett's production at Tennessee. He was an All-America first-team selection this year with Myles Garrett. Kind of gone a little under the radar in the SEC because of some of the quality edge rushers the last couple of years. But he broke Reggie White's sack record in school history. But he's not a dynamic athlete. He reminds me of Graham because of the way he just uses his motor and hustle to get after the quarterback. He would be the perfect complement to have opposite of Graham because you have two guys who you know are going to bring it each and every down and are going to be relentless in the way they get after the quarterback. So for those reasons, when I think of Brandon Graham, I see Derek Barnett, the Tennessee defensive end.
Who are some of the other edge rushers who could be a really good fit in this Eagles scheme?
Well, you know, obviously you're looking at wide nine types. I mean, that's what we look at in the Jim Schwartz defense. Obviously, there's Derek Barnett.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's a fascinating guy to me because the production is there. I don't think he possesses the ideal traits you look for. So I think he'll be a little polarizing in draft rooms. The classic production versus traits.
All right, number nine, Catherine Terrell from ESPN will make the selection here. And with the ninth selection in the Philadelphia Eagles reporter mock draft, the Cincinnati Bengals select defensive end Derek Barnett, Tennessee.
And another section of Eagles fans are very upset. Alex, I know you can say that there's probably a section of fans that would want Derek Barnett in Midnight Green. And this is another selection here at number nine. If you're an Eagles fan, I think it's probably 4, 6, 8, 9, and 11 are like the key slots to watch. And this is certainly one. Cincinnati taking Derek Barnett. It's very, very interesting. Adam, they do need some help pass rush. They need help at linebacker. So this makes sense. All right, so let's keep this show going now. We talked about Derek Barnett throughout a large portion of the offseason leading up to April's draft. Well, there was another defensive lineman that the Eagles selected in April's draft, and he's a player that I said I'm really excited to see more of this summer. We didn't see a ton of him this spring. That player is Elijah Qualls, the sixth-round pick from Washington. Let's get to Elijah Qualls' skill set now in our scouting report.
Dim those lights. We're headed to the film room for the scouting report.
All right, so Elijah Qualls, just under 6'1", 6'5", 313 pounds. He was a first-team All-Pac-12 selection last year. He ran for over 700 yards and 10 touchdowns as a high school senior. He was a running back, fullback hybrid, even though he was about 300 pounds coming out of high school. He's a great wrestler in high school, too. That's something that a lot of people believe translates well to success in the trenches, whether it's on the offensive line or defensive line. Project into the NFL. I was really high on Elijah Qualls. I'm pretty sure, I don't have this in front of me, I'm pretty sure he was one of my five favorite interior defensive linemen in this class. He was a two-year starter at defensive end in their one-gap 3-4 scheme. So he was a 3-4 defensive end for the Huskies, but he lined up all over the place. There were times where he lined up as a 4-eye technique over the defense, over the offensive tackle. He slid down to 3 technique. He slid down to nose tackle. He stood up at times as an edge rusher. You saw him play as a defensive end. He moved around over the center. I mean, he was used in so many different ways for that Washington Huskies defense. He's got a really thick lower half, and that's one of the things that stands out as soon as you see him. He's a really big body. His quickness off the ball, though, I thought was very underrated. People saw his size and said, oh, he's just a pure nose tackle. No, I thought that he's got some juice coming out of his stance. He times the snap pretty well, and he can jar opponents early in the down and change the line of scrimmage because of that quickness and because of his natural power. Strong run defender. He could be tough to move at the point of attack, even by double teams at times. Very stout in that lower half again. And though he plays a bit high, he's built so low to the ground, and he can win with those leverage battle. Is always square to the line of scrimmage. He keeps his hands tight. No matter where he lines up, he displays a good understanding of his role in their run fit. And that's a little bit undersold, is that the fact that he lined up at so many different positions, and no matter where he lined up, he showed a good understanding of, okay, this is my role here in this run fit. I'm setting the edge as a defensive end, or I'm spilling here, or I'm chasing from the backside in pursuit. Wherever he was, he showed really good awareness against the run and always maintained his gap integrity. From a really good tackler in the backfield, and then as a pass rusher, his go-to move was that quick swim move. He'll also use a straight bull rush. He had a spin move in his arsenal and a push-pull move as well. So he beat offensive linemen in a number of different ways. He's got a good feel as a penetrator on stunts. We know how often Jim Schwartz uses stunts up front, so he showed a good feel in that role, good play recognition skills. He read the screenplay really well, and a rangy kid for his size. I was really impressed by his natural athleticism for a 320-pound kid and his ability to run plays down. He played sideline to sideline as well as any interior defensive lineman in this class. I love the urgency he plays with. That motor is going to fit in really, really well here in Philadelphia. Now, what are the things he needs to work on? Why did he fall to the sixth round? Well, I did want to see him win a few more one-on-ones where he just didn't win off the ball. You know, if he didn't win off the ball, I thought that he struggled to counter at times, and that's something that I'm sure he's working on at this point, is further developing that pass rush plan, that ability to counter once initially blocked. I didn't think he was ever going to be a standout pass rusher, but man, to me, I think that he fits in really well as a nose tackle, a one-gap nose tackle in a 4-3 scheme, and that's exactly the role that he got projected to be in here in Philadelphia. Sometimes he'll stop his feet as a bull rusher before he reaches the quarterback. I mentioned he does play a bit high at times. I didn't think he was a true two-gap player. I thought that he'd be more of a one-gap style, get upfield, and still be able to defend the run. I think that that's what Elijah Qualls projects best at. I'm really excited to see how he'll develop here in Philadelphia. Like I said, I thought he was one of the five best interior defensive linemen in this class. The Eagles got him in the sixth round. I was really excited about that pick. So that's how I feel about Elijah Qualls, a player I'm really excited, again, to see more of once the pads come on. Thanks again to Ross Tucker and all of you out there listening, whether you're on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, Spotify, Google Play, and, of course, on PhiladelphiaEagles.com and the Eagles mobile app. Thank you. And if you get the time, rate the show. Leave us a comment. Let us know what you think. Don't be afraid to leave a question on there, too, because I would love the ability to answer it here on the podcast. If there's ever anything specific you want us to hit on in depth, I will absolutely take requests from all of you out there. So wherever you listen, just go shoot us a comment whenever you listen to the show. All that being said, I think that'll do it. Another show in the books here on the Eagle Eye in the Sky podcast. For everybody here at the NovaCare Complex, I'm Fran Duffy. We will talk to you next week.